Hello, life bookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to this month's Life Note for Spiritual Month, moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. I'm your host, Jordan River, and today's Life Note is The Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, The Book of the Way. As always, we'll begin with a quote. The Tao that can be trodden is not the enduring and unchanging Tao. The name that can be named is not the enduring and unchanging name. Core concept. In Chinese philosophy, Tao is defined as the absolute principle underlying the universe, combining within itself the principles of yin and yang and signifying the way or code of behavior that is in harmony with the natural order. Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, or Book of the Way, is considered to be a classical manual for the art of living. At its heart are the fundamental tenets of Taoism. In 81 brief chapters, Lao Tzu reveals to us what it means to live in accordance with the Tao, or the way of the universe. By examining the seven primary themes of this book, we will learn how to work for the greater good and how to impart balance and perspective into our own lives. The Way of the Tao, an introduction. Quote, "The Tao is like the emptiness of a vessel, and in our employment of it, we must be on our guard against all fullness. How deep and unfathomable it is, as if it were the honored ancestor of all things." End quote. The primary theme that runs through the course of this book is the way, or Tao. This is the core and essence of Taoism. Simply put, Tao is the way the world works. It's the idea of an elemental law of nature that dictates the shape and function of the universe. According to Taoism, it is the law that brought the world into being, and it is the law that continues to govern how everything in the world behaves. Lao Tzu dedicates a great number of the Tao Te Ching's 81 chapters to exploring the characteristics and natures of the Tao, as well as the direction in which it's leading the world. In Lao Tzu's writing, we get a sense that there existed a primordial state of chaos before the world emerged. He argues that the Tao must have existed there, otherwise that chaos would have remained forever. Lao Tzu isn't sure how the world began, but when it did, he says, it most certainly was the work of the Tao. Quote, "The Tao produces all things and nourishes them. It produces them and does not claim them as its own." End quote. The Tao gave the world structure and made order out of chaos. We can think of the Tao much in the same way we think of the laws of nature in modern physics, like gravity. These laws have been governing how the universe behaves ever since its inception. The Tao does the same, only, according to Lao Tzu, it is the supreme law of nature that dictates even how those laws behave. The primary thing to know about Lao Tzu's Tao is that resisting it is futile. On the other hand, accepting it makes everything operate more smoothly. Chapter 46 says it well. Quote, "When the Tao prevails in the world, they send their swift horse back to the dung carts. When the Tao is in disregard for the world, the war horses breed in the borderlands." End quote. In other words, when we can accept the Tao, there is peace. But when we disregard it, we better prepare ourselves for an uphill battle. The meaning of Te, a life of virtue. Quote, "The partial becomes complete, the crooked straight, the empty full, the worn out new. He whose desires are few gets them. He whose desires are many goes astray." End quote. Te, or virtue, is another important theme of Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, which is why it appears in the title. In this context, virtue is the noble behavior of someone who follows the Tao, an act that in and of itself is considered virtuous. We humans, however, must learn it. Lao Tzu tells us that virtue on its own has no value, and it's not an active force in the world. Instead, it is the manifestation of accepting the Tao. Therefore, whatever or whomever accepts the Tao is virtuous, and those who oppose it are not. Anything or anyone that opposes the Tao is also destined to a short existence, since going against the Tao is an attempt to counter the way the world works. In Chapter 55, Lao Tzu writes, quote, "Whatever is contrary to the Tao soon ends," end quote. It doesn't get much more straightforward than that. It's important to point out here that Lao Tzu's notion of virtue is quite different from the way you and I probably tend to understand the word. Most of us probably define it as moral behavior or the ability to live according to our closely held ideals. It is something that requires discipline and effort in order to resist our weaknesses. Lao Tzu's virtue, or Te, on the other hand, is something that occurs when we put a stop to our efforts. To him, we are virtuous when we are following the natural way, the Tao, releasing our need for control and surrendering to the flow of nature. This type of virtue is about finding our way back to the behaviors that we had before our conscious minds, technology, and the endless distractions of the modern world led us astray. While our traditional understanding of the word virtue implies that we should rise above our nature, Lao Tzu teaches virtue as a method to return to nature. To Lao Tzu, virtue is really only relevant for anyone who has strayed from the Tao or the Way, as those who are living in according to Tao are already virtuous. To draw a starker distinction between Te and Tao, or virtue and the Way, Lao Tzu describes Tao as the perfection that is hiding in the world, that is forming it and leading it down the right path. In order to get there, we must adopt De. De means that we are living in according to the Tao. Shangzhen, the sage. Quote, "Therefore, the sage manages affairs without doing anything and conveys his instructions without the use of speech." End quote. The third major theme Lao Tzu addresses is that of the sage, or the ideal human being. According to the Tao Te Ching, those who understand the way and act accordingly are sage. Acting accordingly mostly refers to not acting at all. In chapter 29, he writes, quote, "The sage puts away excessive effort, extravagance, and easy indulgence," end quote. We'll talk more about this inaction in our next section, but for now, just know that it's one of the sage's defining characteristics. The sages Lao Tzu refers to repeatedly are often the sages of ancient times. Most Chinese intellects and thinkers during this time period considered the way they were living to be far inferior to the distant past in just about every way, especially when it came to the virtue of society and its inhabitants. Of course, this isn't unique to the Chinese. Practically every culture has at least gone through a phase where the past was praised and held up as the ideal. Lao Tzu was convinced that antiquity was way better than his present reality in pretty much every way, but most definitely in regard to how the ancients lived and according to the Tao, as we can see in chapter 15. Quote, "The skillful masters of the Tao in old times, with a subtle and exquisite penetration, comprehended its mysteries, and were deep also so as to elude men's knowledge." End quote. And in chapter 65, quote, "The ancients showed their skill in practicing the Tao, did so, not to enlighten people, but rather to make them simple and ignorant." End quote. He also quotes the sages throughout the text to emphasize the points he's trying to make, showing obvious reverence and respect for those ancients. Wu Wei, non-action. Quote, "There are few things in this world who attain to the teaching without words, and the advantage arising from non-action," end quote. Non-action, or Wu Wei, is a famous Taoist concept and another major theme in Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. By non-action, Lao Tzu means that we should not hurry to act because most things in the world will take care of themselves if we just let them alone. And when we do act, we should do so with caution, as it is very possible that we will destroy more than we fix or solve. As Lao Tzu says, quote, "When there is this abstinence from action, good order is universal," end quote. According to Taoist teaching, the Tao runs the world perfectly, and it doesn't really need our help. More often than not, when we try to improve or fix things, we just end up making matters worse. Like when we rub the wine stain to try to get it out, but just end up smearing it even wider across our white shirt. We've all been there. A true Taoist is very slow to act, and acts as little as possible when action is absolutely necessary, as most problems are resolved by themselves, according to the Tao. While action is sometimes unavoidable, Lao Tzu advises us to proceed with caution, as the less we must interfere with the natural progression of things, the better. To him, the ideal society is one that goes with the flow, accepting whatever fate is served up and flowing accordingly. He claims that in such instances, fate is gentle. Jian, moderation. Quote, let them not thoughtlessly indulge themselves in their ordinary life. Let them not act as if weary of what that life depends on. It is by avoiding such indulgences that such weariness does not arise. End quote. By now, it shouldn't come as any surprise that another major theme in the Tao Te Ching is moderation. In chapter 59, Lao Tzu says, quote, for regulating the human in our constitution and rendering the proper service to the heavenly, there is nothing like moderation. End quote. He sometimes even speaks with anger about those who are unable to exercise moderation. Over and over again, he returns to the topic of modesty and self-control in all things. Jian is the word used in the Tao Te Ching to relay this concept. It translates into frugality and restraint. Lao Tzu stresses that excess is taxing on both individuals and society as a whole. Nature ruled by the Tao is a delicately balanced thing, so we must keep from rocking the boat with our excessive actions and exaggerations. To achieve true peace of mind, we must harmonize with the Tao through daily humility and stillness. When describing the sage or ideal human, Lao Tzu says, quote, the sage holds in his embrace the one thing of humility and manifests it to all the world. He is free from self-display, and there he shines, from self-assertion, and there he is distinguished, from self-boasting, and therefore his merit is acknowledged, from self-complacency, and there he acquires superiority. End quote. This passage makes it pretty clear just how highly Lao Tzu regards modesty and moderation. This ideal of moderation is probably pretty familiar to us. It's a central tenet of most religions and philosophies the world over. Most of us probably even practice it as part of our own personal health and fitness philosophy. It's okay to have dessert every once in a while, as long as we don't eat the whole cake in one sitting, right? Along with this ideal of moderation, Lao Tzu stresses that worldly possessions and social success do not satisfy the human soul. In chapter 9, he writes, quote, when gold and jade fill the hall, their processor cannot keep them safe. When wealth and honors lead to arrogancy, this brings its evil on itself. When the work is done and one's name is becoming distinguished, to withdraw into obscurity is the way of heaven. End quote. We should not seek recognition and spotlight, but instead be content to melt into obscurity, as this is what it means to live in accordance to the Tao. Wang, King. Quote, a state may be ruled by a measure of correction. Weapons of Wei may be used with crafty dexterity. But the kingdom is made one's own only by freedom from action and purpose. End quote. With non-action and moderation as two central tenets of Taoism, it's no surprise that there isn't much room for ruling in a Taoist manner. Lao Tzu, however, does not ignore that leaders and rulers exist, and in fact are needed. He does impose some pretty strict rules, however, on how they are to go about leading. Just as Lao Tzu instructs the regular people not to seek out the spotlight, he says that the ideal ruler is one who is hesitant and discreet enough to blend into the background. Those who rule or lead according to the Tao will do a lot of good, but they will do it unnoticed, as if things just took care of themselves, as they pretty much always do anyways, according to Lao Tzu. Lao Tzu himself was not a ruler, nor did he desire to be one, but it seems that he does have some authority to speak on the subject. Legend has it that he was a civil servant in the royal court. He became disgusted by what he saw there, and so he left on the back of a water buffalo. Just before crossing into unknown territories, it is said that he wrote the Tao Te Ching at the request of a border guard who is impressed by Lao Tzu's wisdom. Of course, we have no way of knowing if this legend holds any truth, but in the text, Lao Tzu speaks quite candidly about the perspective of a ruler, sometimes so candidly and unforgiving that it's not hard to believe that he would have to leave the country. Take chapter 65, for example. Quote, "The difficulty in governing the people arises from their having much knowledge. He who tries to govern a state by his wisdom is a scourge to it, while he who does not try to do so is a blessing." End quote. Here, Lao Tzu is more or less saying that rulers who try to rule according to what they perceive as their own wisdom, which is pretty much what all rulers and leaders do, will cause nothing but harm to their population. Leaders who do not try to impose their wisdom are a blessing to the people they lead. Zhan, war. Quote, "A master of the art of war has said, 'I do not dare to be the host to commence the war. I prefer to be the guest to act on the defensive. I do not dare to advance an inch. I prefer to retire a foot.'" End quote. The seventh and final major theme that Lao Tzu explores in the Tao Te Ching is war. The most extreme expression of ruling power is war, which, interestingly, is also the principle that opposes the Tao the most. War is nothing but a complete failure to follow and accept the way. In chapter 30, Lao Tzu writes, quote, "He who would assist a lord of men in harmony with the Tao will not assert his mastery in the kingdom by force of arms. Such a course is sure to meet with its proper return. Wherever a host is stationed, briars and thorns spring up. In the sequence of great armies, there are sure to be bad years." End quote. This passage leaves little doubt in our minds as to what Lao Tzu thinks of war. Clearly, Lao Tzu sees war as an atrocity, which puts the world into a very sad state when it is unavoidable. In chapter 29, Lao Tzu says, quote, "There is no calamity greater than lightly engaging in war. To do that is near losing the gentleness which is so precious. Thus, it is that when opposing weapons are actually crossed, he who deplores the situation conquers." End quote. I hope you enjoyed spending this time with me, exploring this wonderful life note. I know I enjoyed this one. I look forward to bringing you more wisdom next month and each and every month as we explore the 12 categories. This is Jordan River signing off, wishing all you Lifebook members an extraordinary day out there. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.